And the topic this morning is the relationship between the BOEM Lease Sale 258, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and Cook Inlet Salmon Fisheries in the area. And there's a lot to talk about to make those distinctions. I have some guests live from remote locations. First of all, there is Bob Shavelson from Cook Inlet Keeper. Fingers crossed, are you there, Bob?
I am, Kathleen. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. Thanks for being on. And Josh Wisniewski over in Seldovia.
I'm here as well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I think there's a little bit of a delay, but we're just going to wait it out. And Josh is a fisherman based in Seldovia and has been working on this for, gosh, how long has this been going on? Let's start with Bob Shavelson, because I want to talk about the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management leases that are going up for sale, and talk about where they are and what they're going to mean for Lower Cook Inlet. So Bob Shavelson, can you talk from Cook Inlet Keeper, can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is a federal agency in the Department of Interior, and they are charged under a federal law called the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act with oil and gas leasing and renewable energy development on the Outer Continental Shelf. And when I say the Outer Continental Shelf, I'm talking about federal waters. That's everything 3 miles from shore. Everything from 3 miles to mean high tide line is state waters. So what the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is proposing now is to push forward with what's called Lease Sale 258, and that would open up 1 million acres of Lower Cook Inlet for heavy industry, for oil and gas development. And that's an area that runs from just south of Cowgan Island down to about Nanwalek on the Lower Peninsula and then over to the west side. So it's a large swath of waters there, and as you mentioned in the introduction, these are the same federal waters that are slated to be closed to the salmon drift net fishery because the Dunleavy administration has refused to co-manage the salmon fishery and the federal waters there with the federal government. And so that's the irony that we're facing here, that we're shutting down a renewable, sustainable industry, and we're promoting a non-renewable industry in this area. But you know, there's been a long history of oil and gas leasing in Lower Cook Inlet, and I think it's important for folks to recognize that in the 1970s, fishermen and local tribes and people fought back a large lease sale in Kachemak Bay. And some folks might recall the incident around the George Ferris drilling rig in Mud Bay that had a high tide wash over it and resulted in a sizable spill. And that prompted a buyback of all the leases in Kachemak Bay. And so that incident is incredibly relevant today, because had that buyback not occurred, Kachemak Bay would be pocked with oil platforms and pipelines and processing facilities, and it would obviously be a very different place. So from our perspective and the perspective of a lot of other folks that rely on Lower Cook Inlet, if we allow heavy industry to spread into the Lower Inlet, we're going to radically change the whole essence of this wild place, and we're going to change our lifestyles and our businesses and our economies that rely on clean water and healthy fisheries and incredible wild places. And that just makes no sense.
Hey, Bob, I want to, you mentioned the state, and I want to talk about, I did contact the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and they declined to participate today or pre-record or even send a statement other than whatever they have to say hasn't changed and it's on their website. But I did speak to Dan Sadler, communications director at DNR, and he declined to say anything for attribution with one exception, which is he sent an email that says, as we discussed, several of your questions presume lease sale 258 will actually take place and that exploration and production will follow. It is by no means a given that the proposed lease sale will take place. And so I wanted to ask about that. With the 60-day moratorium that the Biden administration has just announced, will that affect this in any way, do you think, Bob Shavelson?
Well, I think the Biden administration is coming in and they're going to take a hard look at climate change. They just released some information this morning that they're actually going to bring science back into decision making at the federal level, which is pretty heartening because we haven't seen that in the past several years. So I think that's very important. And, you know, there's an incredible disconnect that we're seeing here in Lower Cook Inlet. So on one hand, you've got one arm in the federal government, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which for all intents and purposes has now just become an arm of the oil and gas industry. The fact that they won't come on and talk to the public on radio is indicative of that. And then on the other hand, you've got fisheries managers in the National Marine Fisheries Service who closed the Pacific cod fishery in the Gulf of Alaska last year. And for the first time ever, they cited climate change as the reason for low population numbers. So you've got one arm of the federal government pushing oil and gas development, which is going to aggravate climate change, and another closing a vital fishery that really plays an important role in the economies and for the families in Homer and the Lower Peninsula.
And I also want to say that I did contact Hillcorp and Hex trying to get participation from people who drill in the inlet, but they did not respond at all. So just to let the listeners know. And if you have any questions or comments, you can either call 235-7721 or you can email them to info@kbbi.org. Now, Josh Wisniewski, I want to bring you into the conversation because I haven't heard from you yet and I don't want to leave you hanging. What kind of work have you don't fish this fishery that's been closed, but you have been working on this issue. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I don't participate directly at this point in the peacod fishery that was closed in 2020 in this same area, or the upper inlet salmon fishery. I've been tracking in this issue since Hillcorp first started doing their seismic testing back in 2019, which they did without any baseline analysis on what the impact of that testing would be, particularly on the lower trophic level aspects of the environment, copepods and petropods, which are...
Can you talk about what you mean? Can you explain what you mean?
Sure. So let me step back, I guess, for a second. That Lower Cook Inlet is a critical part of the broader Gulf of Alaska ecosystem. And the way that works is because of our large tides, the inlet draws in these kind of deep water nutrients from the Gulf of Alaska that mix with our surface sediment waters that are flowing out of the inlet. And here in Lower Cook Inlet, all of those nutrients mix together and then are subsequently flushed back out of the inlet into the Gulf of Alaska, and they mix with the Gulf of Alaska gyre. And then those currents spread throughout the Gulf. So the impacts from development, whether that's just the exploration, or if there is development, the discharge, or the potential for a large spill event, has the potential to flush that oil and gas or pollutants right out into the Gulf of Alaska. And so to me as a fisherman, regardless of your gear type or whatever sector of the fishing economy you participate in, whether that's as a charter or a personal use sport fisherman or our subsistence fisheries that we have here across the bay and our family commercial fisheries, this affects everybody who participates in fishing in Lower Cook Inlet and in the Gulf of Alaska. And as Bob said, to have fisheries being closed in the EEZ, like our local drift fishery, where the majority of the harvest takes place in that area, I just think it's morally and ethically wrong to try to have our fisheries not prioritized while oil and gas development is, and particularly in this time of climate change, where we know the Gulf of Alaska is under so much stress. We're having declines in forage fish, and the potential for oil and gas to kind of at development to add to those stresses is just, to me as a fisherman, just not acceptable and something that impacts all of us.
Thanks for that insight. And North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is meeting right now. They're meeting this week. And they are the ones who restricted the salmon fishing in Cook Inlet. And the reason for that is, as far as I can figure, is that because the state will not cooperate the state won't cooperate with the federal organizations who are putting up these leases. And I spoke with Robert Ruffner. He was formerly the head of the Kenai Water, executive director of the Kenai Watershed Forum. He has been a member of the Board of Fisheries. And we spoke about why those two organizations, why the federal government and the state government can't cooperate on this. Mostly it's a refusal on the state government side to do so. And Josh and Bob, Robert Ruffner talked to me a little bit about how it's been many months onto years of people in the area, stakeholders, trying to work out an agreement so that both things can happen. What have you been involved in any of that, Josh, in the planning?
I don't fish in the upper inlet. I have many friends who do, and I have been tracking that issue. You know, the state of Alaska historically manages all of our salmon fisheries and has managed the salmon fishing that's taking place in the exclusive economic zone as long as that fishery's been under state management. And the state's certainly aware that, you know, the majority of the harvest from the inlet drift fleet takes place in that area. So it's I haven't been tracking the issue as a participant, but it's incomprehensible to me why the state would refuse to continue to manage a fishery that it's always managed, knowing the economic impact that's going to have on the broader fleet and the whole Kenai Peninsula.
Thanks. I want to play the interview that I had with Robert Ruffner, because he helps to show a little more about what's going on with the fishery. I want to start bringing the fishery into this discussion. And I know there are a few people who might call in today. If you have experience with this, or a question or a comment, you can call 235-7721, or you can email your question to info@kbbi.org. Bob Shavelson, before I roll this interview with Robert Ruffner, I want to make sure that we're ready to move on, and that there's no more information about the lease sales that we haven't really shared. I know that they have, when I post the coffee table, I'll be including links to their virtual meeting room and to their website so that people can get the information about, they're holding three meetings coming up in February. But Bob, have I left anything out in terms of introducing issue? Go ahead.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, we mentioned how, you know, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management did not want to come on the radio. They basically, you know, they're holing up in a bunker, and that's the way they engage the public these days. They say, go to a website, come to some virtual meeting. And the fact is, they went through an environmental impact statement process in 3 months. Okay, that's unheard of. That's a record in the United States. No one's ever produced an environmental impact statement in that short a time. And the reason is you just can't do a comprehensive analysis on all the potential reasonably foreseeable impacts that are going to flow from such complex activities like oil and gas exploration and development and production in that short a time. So it just shows us that the previous administration was really trying to rush this out the door and to get something moving. And so it's heartening that we're seeing the current administration saying, wait, we're gonna put the brakes on and we're going to take a hard look at this.
Okay. Now I want to play this interview. This was yesterday. And this is Robert Ruffner. He is former member of the Board of Fish and former executive director of the Kenai Watershed Forum. And he's been working on salmon fishery issues in the area for a very long time. So this is Robert Ruffner. Robert Ruffner.
So I'm working as a representative to the Alaska Salmon Alliance, which is a consortium of the seafood processors on the Kenai Peninsula.
Can you line out for people what happened? North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, they're meeting right now. They restricted fishing.
Earlier, well, it was last fall, North Pacific Fisheries Management Council had been taking up an issue that was brought to them as a result of some legal actions surrounding the requirements of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. The Conservation and Fisheries Management guides all fishing activity in federal waters. And a portion of the Cook Inlet is considered as part of that federal waters. And that's any waters that are outside of the 3 miles of shoreline. The contention was that the Magnuson-Stevens Act required that they have a fisheries management plan in place for that area that complies with the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And through some court action, it was determined that they weren't in compliance, and the court ordered that they fix that fisheries management plan to come in compliance with that, much like they do for other fisheries around the state that occur in that same zone. So that's crab fisheries, cod fisheries, rockfish, and some others.
The Magnuson-Stevens Act, it's a federal act.
That's a federal act.
Right. Correct. And so there is tension between state agencies and the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Why they can't cooperate so the fishery can go forward?
Well, they can't cooperate because the state administration said that they don't want to cooperate. They did that in such a disingenuous way that it really leads me and others to cry foul.
Well, how so?
So this lawsuit that brought this forward, you know, happened several years ago, and people have been working in good faith to come up with what are the cooperative elements of the state and the federal government that need to occur to allow fisheries to occur in that zone. And so they've had meetings and advisory committees and so forth, meeting and working to try to come up with some resolution to that end. And again, you know, just like they do in many other fisheries around the state, and at least from my perspective and the perspective of many others, we were making progress towards coming up with what that agreement needed to be as part of that federal management plan. At the very last minute, the state came forward and said, we're taking our ball and going home. We don't want to play. So even though fishing from Alaskans has occurred in that area since statehood and really took off, you know, after the homesteading era, that, I mean, people have been fishing, grift fishermen have been fishing out there for that length of time. In one fell swoop, the state just said, we don't want to play, and we're just going to give up our state's rights to fish in that area. They just gave it up and said, you know, we're not going to fish in that area. And that's very significant because it does affect some other parts of the state where this same kind of activity occurs. And I would blame the state of Alaska, this administration, solely for leading the charge on taking that action. For the Kenai Peninsula Borough and our processors and the 500 family fishermen that participate in that fishery, this is a significant economic blow to our area. And I don't think the general population is kind of caught up with what this means, but we're talking several million dollars every year that are no longer going to flow into our economy because of this action that the Dunleavy administration took.
And so you've been working for several years now on crafting this plan, or like a usage plan. Was that?
Well, I've been a participant in it, you know.
Right. I don't mean you
years.
Alone. I'm sorry. I don't
yeah,
mean
yeah,
you
no,
alone.
Several years ago, you know, I was on the Alaska Board of Fisheries. So in that role, you know, we paid very close attention to the fisheries management plans that the state has, but also are very aware of the federal plans and the interplay between those two. And so I was watching that process as a board member, and I was not reappointed by this administration 2 years ago, but still stayed involved and have been working with the area processors to understand what the implications of this closure would be. We were all surprised when at the very last minute, the very last meeting before they had to take action, they said, we're not going to participate in this. Well, all along, you know, for the past 3 or 4 years, there were multiple opportunities where the state could have said, we don't think this is a good idea, and we'd rather see some other paradigm involved in this. But they played along acting like that there could be a deal cut at the end of the day where there would be some delegation of authority, where the federal government would delegate their authority to the state, and we could continue fishing in this area much like we have for, you know, 50, 60 years. But that just did not happen because the state didn't want to participate in that model of cooperation.
And we're talking about a huge economic impact because you said 500 boats in the fleet that fish that area?
There are about 500, you know, active drift boats that fish in that area.
Plus processors.
So this is where it really gets to be the economic consequences of this are really a big deal, because that portion of Cook Inlet typically is the first area that sockeye are harvested and brought to processors. So the consequence of not being able to fish in that area, it shortens the season by a couple of weeks for processors to be up and operating. And that couple of weeks is really important because it bridges a gap between our winter fisheries. So processors right now are buying cod and processing other ground fish right now. And then they switch over to start processing salmon. And now they're going to have a hiatus where there's no quantity of fish coming in. And so it really upsets the business models that have been in play for a long time here. And we're already seeing a downturn in the processors, the number of processors, and the competition between processors that afford the local fishermen the best price, because we just have had the consolidation of processors across the peninsula.
And North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is meeting right now. They issued the restriction, right?
So they issued the restriction last fall, October, November. That's when they issued this declaration that they were just going to close the area rather than develop a management plan that would have some cooperation. So it was an action of the council. The council is made up of a number of different entities across the state of Alaska, but also from Oregon and Washington. Had the state of Alaska said that we want to cooperate and work through this, there would have been a very different outcome in the vote that was taken by that council. So the state of Alaska is the one that led the charge to close that area, while at the same time, they're talking about promoting economic development and helping to prop up our local economy. To fix this problem, what has to happen is that the state has to change their position and convince the council that closing that area was the wrong decision. Short of that, there really is no other entity that can help resolve that.
Anything underway to move this through the court system?
There are discussions about legal action that are occurring, you know, but right now we're in a little bit of a holding pattern because the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is advisory to the Secretary of Commerce. So they've given their advice to close this area, but until that is actually in play and has been acted upon by the Secretary of Commerce, there really isn't a legal action to take. So the waters are not closed as of today. So it's from the court's point of view, the harm has not occurred yet. But once that action is followed up on, or if it's followed up on by the Secretary of Commerce, then there will be harm that can be demonstrated, and then it may be ripe for legal action.
Are there any legislators, state legislators, who have taken up this project?
When the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council took public comments on this particular issue, all of our state delegation on the Kenai Peninsula weighed in and said they did not want to see a closure. So all of our senators and all of our representatives weighed in, along with 224 people in total made comments not to close this area. There was one comment in favor of it, and that came from Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. And I've been in this arena for 30 years, and I've never seen this blatant and overt of a following one side over the other. So several million dollars every year that's, you know, not going to be seen here.
What next steps are you taking?
Well, so I think we're going to pursue all avenues to try to reverse this, you know, and so kind of outline, you know, the three branches of government. And at this point, we have seen no indication that the administration is willing to bend on this issue. So there are two other branches of government, and given the interest and the amount of money that's involved in this, I fully expect that we will pursue those other two avenues.
Robert Ruffner, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thanks to Robert Ruffner for talking to me yesterday. I have some callers on the line, so I want to find out. So, caller, are you there?
Yes, so you hear me?
Go ahead. Who is this?
My name is Steve, and Robert recently sort of touched on what my question was about. At the risk of, you know, blame or perceiving division, I couldn't help but wonder, over the many years on the Kenai Peninsula here, there's been conflict with the sport and commercial fisheries, and the Kenai River Sport Association has become quite powerful and influential with this particular governor. I can't help but wonder how much this plays into the politics of this decision, and perhaps there's no way of knowing, but it smells of the same old politics to me in a way. That's my question. What do you feel somewhat a part of the factors involved with this drastic decision?
I wish that Robert were here live. We recorded yesterday to answer that question, but I can tell you it's not just this governor that has had a long-standing relationship with the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. It's been a long-standing relationship. But I do have, I believe I have Dave Martin on the line. Dave, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Dave. Dave is...
Good morning.
Good morning. Dave is president of USHEDA, Upper Cook Inlet Drift Association. Do I have that right?
Yes, USHEDA.
Thank you. And can you talk a little bit about how the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council's restrictions will directly affect USHEDA?
Well, first off, Robert Ruffner did a good job of kind of outlining what's been going on. USHEDA's been in this issue for almost 10 years now, and has some legal avenues, lawsuits going forward. Just basically from mismanagement of the state on the resource, on the salmon resource, that's been going down and down, not from lack of fish, but lack of management. And classic example of this 2018 or 2019 and 20 basically had an economic disaster. It wasn't from lack of fish, it was lack of management to be able to harvest the salmon resource. And that affects everybody. You know, this was and that's what the Magnuson case is all about, as Robert alluded to, was to get the management back to but what the law says is on the 10 national standards, and number one is for maximum sustained yield in the economies of the local communities, the fishermen, their livelihoods and everything. This is a $50 to $100 million industry, and it's been taken down to less than $10 million industry just from the management regime that's been going on, especially with this current administration. People remember Dunleavy was a senator before. He campaigned on closing the inlet to commercial fishing to put all the salmon up into the northern district that they could. And since he became governor, he's kind of going along that same line at a fast track to the commissioner level, restricting the fisheries. You know, last year we had a record, I don't know about a record, but we had a big run of pinks, you know, probably 18 million pinks to 30 million, and we could have harvested 7 million, and we harvested about 300,000 maybe, just because of the management. there's 100 or 1.3 million sockeye could have been harvested for the biologically scheme of goal, and the management kept us from harvesting this. So that's kind of what we're doing through lawsuits. The state's booked the managed under the guidelines of the Magnuson-Stevens Act to the salmon throughout its range. We have been involved with the council since we won the lawsuit in 2016 from the Ninth Circuit. It went to the U.S. Supreme Court. They refused to hear it because there wasn't anything there. And sent it back, and we've been involved as fishermen to write up a fisheries management plan that's been compliant. The council had been an obstacle since day one because they were going to only do an FMP for the federal waters, so-called south of Caligan Island, which is the most productive spot for the drift fleet to fish. And this is the result of the council's actions. Like Robert said, this is advisory. It goes to Secretary of Commerce. It is not a done deal by any means. It's a time frame that will probably take about, they got till December 11th to take action on to see if it's compliant or not. And then we can get public opinion to hopefully they will say that it's not compliant, and we'll go back to get a compliant fisheries management plan, which allows us to harvest the resource for maximum sustained yield.
So hey, Dave.
There's kind of a lot involved in it.
Hey, Dave, I think you just said that you had until December 30th, but did you mean March 30th?
No, the courts have given the council to secretary, but December 11th we should have a decision. The Secretary of Commerce will send it back to NOAA, NIMS, and they will see where the recommendation of the council is in compliance or not, and of course it isn't. One thing I will say about the council too, there's 11 members on the council, 6 of them represent the state of Alaska. It's kind of turned into a political entity in itself, I think. They made a comment back in 2012, well, actually about 2010 when we brought this issue before them, that they didn't want anything to do with salmon management, wanted to wash their hands of it to go back to the Board of Fish, which we did. Of course, no avail there, and back to the council, and then we had the only avenue left was the courts, and fortunately, they ruled with the laws as stated. So.
Right. Well, thanks so much. Can you stay on the line for a little while, and I'll see if in case we get a question for you.
Sure. And I will say, I guess Sarah Vance has brought forth a bill in the legislature to open this easy area back up. Against the recommendations of the council, and but as far as the FMP goes, you've got to manage the fisheries throughout its range. It's no different than migratory birds and animals. You know, one state can't obviate them, but another state be conservative and manage them properly. So it's kind of the same issue here.
Well, thanks for bringing that up, because that's my next thing on the list.